Up next, mindfulness. Ever find yourself going through your day stuck in autopilot mode, waking up at 7:15, wolfing down your usual hot cereal, really, without really tasting it, while you read the paper, your emails, your Facebook feed? Then it's off to work, sitting in traffic, on the bus or train, consumed by thoughts of that electric bill. Oh, you forgot to pay that. The birthday call you have to make. That confrontation you want to avoid at work today. Or what you're cooking for dinner tonight. Any of this sound familiar? Would you like instead to turn off those stressful thoughts of the day and just concentrate on what's going on around you right now? Relax, enjoy the moment, then worry about that stuff later. That's what my next guest advises, what he calls mindfulness-based cognitive therapy or mindfulness meditation, a practice he says can sometimes be as effective as drugs at staving off recurring bouts of depression. What's the science behind meditation therapy, and what are the connections between body and brain? Mark Williams is here to explain, and he's actually going to guide us through a mini meditation session. We don't want you to do this while you're driving, so a little bit later we're going to do a little meditation. And maybe you'll pull off the road or listen to it later on the podcast. Mark Williams is the author of Mindfulness, an eight-week plan for finding peace in a frantic world. He's also professor of clinical psychology at the University of Oxford in England. He joins us from BBC Radio Solent in Southampton, England. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you very much indeed.
Could you explain, is there a nutshell you could explain what mindfulness is?
Well, mindfulness is a form of awareness, really. So we're all aware sometimes that just as your wonderful description of getting up in the morning and, as it were, driving to work with all these things going through your head, we also know that sometimes we can naturally switch that off. Sometimes if we take the time to take a walk with a youngster, you know, 3 or 4 year old, and they're going very slowly along the road and they're looking at things. And sometimes you just have this capacity to slow down at their pace, to see what they're seeing as if through their eyes, and to see little tiny details of life as if for the first time. So we know rushing around, but we also know how to slow down sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's just that slowing down is actually very difficult to do.
Yeah, especially in this age. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. You can call us to talk about mindfulness. Maybe you practice it yourself. You can go to our Twitter. You can tweet us at SciFry. Is this especially challenging time with all the distractions from our cell phones and tablets and things like that?
There's no doubt that we have always lots of new challenges. Now, whether cell phones and emails and stuff, which of course most of us find get us down from time to time, whether that's something which is a passing phase in the sense that perhaps the new generation coming up will learn how to cope with that better than we who've been around a while without it and then find it very overwhelming. But certainly the 24/7 days a week connectivity, as my colleague John Kabat-Zinn at the UMass Medical Center has pointed out, that sense of connectivity means that we have to take special measures to know how to slow down and how to take a brain break, if you like.
Yeah, we're going to talk about those special methods for slowing down and taking a brain break. We're going to try to take one right here on Science Friday. After the break, we're going to come back and have Mark Williams give us a little demonstration of how to practice mindfulness. Our number, 1-800, this is something mindful, 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Also, you can tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI, and we'll try a little mindfulness during the break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking with Mark Williams, author of Mindfulness, an 8-week plan for finding peace in a frantic world. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. You can tweet us or on Facebook. Go to our Facebook site at SciFry and tell us, do you meditate? Why you do it? What do you get out of it? You can tweet us or leave us a little note there on our Science Friday Facebook page. Mark, who is this book for? Is it for people who suffer bouts of depression? Is it for people who – is it for everyone? Is it to teach you how to focus on what you want to focus on instead of all those other things?
Absolutely. If you start with that last question, most of us find that our attention is often hijacked by our current concerns. So our attention just wanders all over the place and it's very difficult to focus. So one of the first things you learn in mindfulness meditation is how to just settle the mind, how to focus, not to clear the mind. So it's not the idea that you try to switch off all these thoughts going through, but that you see them passing through the mind like clouds in the sky. Mm-hmm. And that already gives you a greater sense of balance and control in your life. And the reason why it's relevant for everybody and not just people who get depressed is because both getting caught up in the constant spin of rushing around in a frantic world needs some addressing for many, many of us, most of us indeed, but also we find that exactly the same strategies, the same skills, we found in our research actually reduces the risk of depression. For those who get depressed in life many times, especially those with three or more previous depressions, it halves the risk of depression coming back.
So this is actually measurable, the effect.
Indeed, indeed. So there have been now six trials around the world, starting off with a trial that Zindel Siegel in Toronto and John Teasdale in Cambridge and I did now 10 years ago. And that was the first trial to establish that 8 weeks of this training could reduce depression. And we measured it both with questionnaires, but also with very careful interviews based on the American Psychiatric Association's interview to diagnose depression. And the interviewers were blind. They didn't know whether people had had the meditation or not. So they couldn't, as it were, make up the results to try to make the results better. Mm-hmm. And they found this really striking reduction in the risk of future depression.
Mm-hmm. Mark, can you give us a little taste of the sort of meditation you teach in the book? A little session? Here,
yeah. So here's a 2 or 3 minute meditation that people can try out. As you quite rightly said, it's not wise to do it if you're in your car and you're doing lots of things that need your full attention. But if you can, you can become aware of your posture. And just if you're in a sitting position, you might want to just sit up straight. So you've got a straight spine, but not stiff, not sort of like a sergeant major, just with the back straight, the head balanced, the shoulders can be quite relaxed and dropped. And even this sense of changing your posture already signals your intentions to step out of autopilot. And then there are 3 steps now that people can try for themselves. The first is just to notice what's going on in mind and body right now. So in the silence that comes up, just notice any thoughts that are around, any feelings or emotions there may be, any body sensations that are around, noticing any tendency we have to want to change what we discover, and seeing if it's possible to simply allow it to be just as it is, just as it already is. And then moving to step 2 of this short meditation, to gather your attention, to let all that fade into the background, gather the attention and place it lightly on the breath. So just noticing the sensations of the breath moving in and out of the body. And it may be convenient just to focus on the sensations down in the abdomen. You can put your hand on the abdomen if you like and just notice the rising of the in-breath and the falling away of the out-breath. And just paying attention as best you can to that sensation of breathing in and breathing out. Not trying to control the breath in any way, simply allowing the breath to breathe you. And if the mind wanders at all, just notice where it went and very gently escort it back to the breath. The sensations of in or out breath. And now taking step 3 of this short meditation and expanding the attention to the body as a whole, sitting here. So simply noticing the whole body, all the sensations in the body from the surface of the skin and right deep inside. As if the whole body was breathing now. And allowing the sensations in the body to be just as you find them. A sense of coming home to the body. And then when you're ready, beginning to move fingers and toes, opening your eyes if they've been closed, and taking in wherever you are, all your surroundings, and allowing the meditation to pass, and coming back to this moment. So, that's it, Ira.
That's nice. Is this something that you have distilled from other meditation techniques, or something you've?
Yeah, I mean, what we were right at the beginning of our research in the beginning of the 1990s, we were very, very helped by a tremendous breakthrough that had been made by Jon Kabat-Zinn and his colleagues at the UMass Medical Center in Worcester. And he'd developed mindfulness-based stress reduction for chronic pain and people whose illness was caused by stress or who were stressed by their illness. And he developed an 8-week program in which he'd taken some of the essence of these centuries-old, well, they could call them spiritual exercises. They exist in all religions and they exist in secular contexts as well. And he'd put them in the heart of a general hospital for chronic pain. And he generously allowed us to use that as the format for applying mindfulness to our problem that we had as psychologists, which was the gradual realization that had come to the fore at the last part of the 20th century, that depression was getting more and more common, and recurrence was very, very in the minds of clinicians, because people were getting depressed earlier in life, so they're having a whole lifetime where they were at risk of a new episode of depression. So the emphasis changed from treating depression to preventing depression. And so we distilled from Jon Kabat-Zinn using many of the meditations he used. And the 3-minute breathing space, which is what we've just been through, was a distillation even further down, so that people could have a meditation which was very portable, that they could take around and do at any time of day, whenever they felt they needed to gather themselves. Mm. And you notice the very first step of the breathing space is not actually going to the breath at all, but just checking in with what's the weather pattern like in your mind and body, a sense of what is this, what's arising for me right now. And that itself is a huge gesture of openness to yourself, of friendliness towards yourself. And for people who are depressed or frantic all the time, we're not very much friends with ourselves. You know, we tend to beat ourselves up all the time.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones, see some questions we've gotten. Robin in Broomfield, Colorado. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Robin.
Am I on the air?
You certainly are. I know you probably put yourself at very much at ease at that mindful session we just had.
Well, I can tell you firsthand that mindfulness works, and it absolutely changed my life. I am so excited that you're running this program. Thank you for running this program to make people more aware of mindfulness. I am in the process, through my nonprofit organization, to launch a program for children, teaching children mindfulness in the schools. And it's such an amazing thing for kids, and they're doing all this research to back how it's helping children with impulse control and more focused and assured in their abilities to help them to redirect their thoughts and be more clear. And when you clear away the stress, it's a lot easier for them to do that and take in and retain information.
Absolutely.
So it's really exciting.
Yeah. Thanks, Robin. Absolutely. We've got some schools programs over in the United Kingdom as well. And it's extraordinary how children get it so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that?
We lost her. I think she's
gone.
But you have experience with kids.
Yeah. We mostly in our Oxford Mindfulness Center deal with adults, 18 to towards older age adults. But we support various other groups that are looking at children. And we also do even earlier than that for mindfulness-based childbirth and parenting to prepare for a new baby, based on the Californian work going on by Nancy Bardicky, a nurse midwife in California who's developed childbirth and parenting programs with mindfulness. But the school's work that Robin have alluded to, Goldie Hawn's doing a lot of work with her Mind Up program in the States. That's also coming to the UK. And I mean, the whole idea of brain breaks, for example, is from the Goldie Hawn Mind Up program, where she just is very matter of fact about the way in which kids are able to take these short breaks, and it really helps them focus their attention.
Talking with Mark Williams, author of Mindfulness, an 8-week plan for finding peace in a frantic world. Can people get frustrated trying to do this correctly during your instructions?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, the frustration is a real good opportunity during meditation to notice all the adverse sort of little reactions that happen. Like I noticed you say, to doing it correctly. And there's a great emphasis in our world, isn't there, of making sure you do things well.
Exactly.
And, you know, we don't ever heed that wise advice that says if a thing's worth doing, it's worth doing badly. And I think in one sense, with meditation, the sense of having the intention to be, to give yourself a little break, to be with yourself as you are, that's already enormous. It's an enormous act of generosity towards yourself. And then you can watch all these thoughts coming up, like, am I doing it correctly? Oh, maybe I've done it wrong. I'm not trying hard enough. Oh, I went to sleep. Oh, my mind wandered. And that's exactly the stuff of meditation. Meditation is not sitting blissfully at the top of the mountain with the mind clear. It's actually noticing all the stuff that we don't normally notice, going through our mind and then learning to relate differently to all of this stuff. We notice that sense of failure, we notice the sense of frustration, and we notice the sense of, I must always get things right, or it means I'm a bad person. We notice that, and then gradually sort of step back a little, not in an avoidant way, but see it like standing behind the waterfall, seeing its force, but not getting dragged down by it.
Mm-hmm. In your book, Mindfulness, one of the things you recommend is being more spontaneous. Tell us about that.
Well, one of the things we ask people to do week by week is not just to meditate, but do things in their daily life, which just sort of shake up the habits a bit. So, for example, we suggest just sitting in a different sort of different chair at meetings occasionally or at home, just to get that different perspective. Or maybe doing sort of going to a movie theatre without planning with a friend, perhaps without planning beforehand what you're going to see. So you just turn up at 7 in the evening or 8 in the evening and you just watch what's there. Just choose when you get there. Now, most movie theatres often have a big choice, so it's not a disaster to do that. But there is a sort of sense of spontaneity, a sense of reclaiming the life that you probably, you know, lost when you moved out of teenage or early 20s. Many of us are very cautious. We want to plan our time to the last second, and that means not going to see anything that we didn't plan beforehand and know what it was. So that sense of just shaking up and being a little more spontaneous can help reclaim your life a bit more.
But I find the idea of living for the moment, I mean, being in the moment that you're living, and a very interesting and worthwhile pursuit. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR. Talking with Mark Williams, author of Mindfulness, an 8-week plan for finding peace in a frantic world. To follow up on that thought, just to be able to sit there and say, this is the moment, and I'm going to enjoy this moment because I can't control what's going to happen in the future.
Exactly.
But I can control what's happening right now.
That's right. That the only time that we really make our choices is in the present moment. And it doesn't mean that you have to suspend all your planning. Sometimes you have to plan for the future. Mm-hmm. But most of us are pre-living the future. We're not really planning the future now. We're just pre-living it and all the worries and things that might go wrong. And we're reliving the past. So, you know, sometimes we have to remember what happened in the past. But can we remember knowing that we're remembering? Can we plan knowing that we're planning? And that brings the remembering and the planning into the present moment. And the science, the neuroscience, is really interesting. The brain changes when you do that in really interesting ways.
So in what can you describe that for us?
Well, there are a number of things. One of the things that my colleague David Creswell in UCLA found when he put people in a brain scanner, and he took people who were either high or low on a mindfulness scale. So if you're low on that scale, it means that you're rushing around all the time, you don't taste your food, you know, you're always listening only with one ear to what people are saying because your other ear is off doing something else. That sort of sense of rushing all the time. So he had people that varied on that dimension, that mindfulness dimension, and he put them in a scanner and looked to see what the brains were doing. And what he found was a pretty characteristic feature of people who always rushing around is the part of the brain that is usually in fight and flight mode, it's called the amygdala, was actually in a sort of chronic state of overactivity. So when we rush around, we may believe that we're rushing around to get things done or that we're being very creative, but that it's an illusion of productivity. And as far as the brain is concerned, it's like as if we're running away from a tiger.
Wow. So
that's really interesting. Now, when he puts then people through an 8-week course, you find that the amygdala actually settles down. It normalizes, it switches off. It instead of running around, as it were, away from a tiger all the time, it addresses the reality of the situation rather than the constant sort of looking for threats. So that's one very important part of neuroscience. Another is the work by Sarah Lazar at Mass General. She's found that people that meditate for over a long period actually have structural changes in their brain in very interesting parts of the brain that are about attention, attentional control, and also a part of the brain called the insula, which others have found even short-term changes. We know the insula is active in empathy, and it also switches on for lots of other things as well. But one of the critical factors here is it seems to be active in when we have an empathic response, like feeling the feelings of other people, the insula switches on. That is changed by mindfulness meditation. And what also other people have found is the Toronto group, Norman Farb, and his colleagues in Toronto have found that there's a sort of an uncoupling of our ability to appreciate the body with thoughts about things. And we switch off the stories.
If you want to read the rest of what's going on, read Mark Williams' book, Mindfulness, an 8-week plan for finding peace in a frantic world. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ira.
We're going to have this up on our Facebook page as a sci-fi snack. The whole meditation that we went through will be up there at the end of the show. So if you missed it, you can check it out then.